Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for December 14th, 2017. And tonight's main science topic, I will be talking more about comets, planets. It's a theme that includes a lot of, side issues. Let's just put it that way. And let me begin by saying this. Let's imagine that you hear something. You read it in the news, you're taught it, it's taught in school, and then all of a sudden somebody else comes along and says, hey, wait a minute, none of this is true. You know, your mind is set to, in a sense, reject that because all your life you've been taught one thing. And that's what, for example, a small example is people had an issue when Pluto was demoted from a planet. And so even the common person said, well, you know, I was taught this as a kid, you know, and it was in the textbooks, and now all of a sudden it's not. And, of course, they didn't really understand all the politics and behind-the-scene maneuvering that was going on. But it just, you know, it just kind of crosses you. It's like, well, wait, this is what I always thought. And so, therefore, we have a hard time as human beings changing our database, our thought process, our what we think we know processes that go on in the brain. And it's kind of tough because it's like a wheel going in one direction, and all of a sudden you gotta stop it and turn it in another direction. You know, you're rolling down the hill and all of a sudden you find out you shouldn't be rolling down the hill or something. You know, it's hard to put the brakes on and then reverse it. That's the more difficult. You can kind of put the brakes on a little bit and say, well, maybe not. But then to reverse it is, you know, difficult. It's difficult for the human mind. So when I come along and I talk about things, for example, I was on two shows yesterday as guest. I was on the John Moore Show. And then the second Tuesday of every month, I'm always the guest on the Power Hour with Daniel Brigman. And, you know, I started talking to the crowd about the Venus event and how Mars had its atmosphere removed. And it's not only something that the ancients tell us about, but it's there's a tremendous amount of physical evidence. And I've been to geological meetings with the NASA scientists at the American Geophysical Union meeting. And I go to a lot more. A lot of people go there. They give their own talk. They go to their own special interest groups. But I'm different. I really scour the different meetings and talks and things to get an edge on what other people are doing in different fields. Like geology is just something I happen to be interested in. And I'll never be a professional geologist, but it's something that I happen to know something about. And it's something, a topic that has really a tremendous amount of incorrect theoretical work, like plate tectonics, for example. It simply doesn't work. But they continue to promote this. But the NASA scientists sat in a meeting, and there were very few people there, oddly enough. After the Mars rover, they had vast numbers of pictures of Mars surface, which had water erosion, very clear water erosion, like little trickle paths where the water had come down, and a little spillway with gravel at the bottom, clear indications of very recent water geological activity on Mars. And they sat there and they looked, they knew who I was, and they looked at me and they, you know, they're like, you know, this is real recent. This is not like a million years ago. It's not 100,000 years ago. It's not even 10,000 years ago. So this is real recent, but you look at Mars, it has no water, it has no atmosphere. And so when I come out and I start talking about Venus, the comet coming by Mars, taking away its atmosphere because first it connects electrically, and then Venus, the comet nucleus, was larger. The surface gravity, let me put it this way, the surface gravity was greater than that of Mars. So it won the tug of war and literally pulled the atmosphere in oceans, because once you get the atmosphere off, the oceans aren't going to be there long. They're simply going to evaporate away, and they're going to come charging up that electric stream tube, that plasma tube, and be gobbled up by the comet. That's just the physics of what would happen. But of course, none of this would make sense if you thought comets were dirty snowballs. That none of this would happen. If you thought that planets never had interactions with anything else, none of this would happen. So the scientists' minds not only are locked in because they got PhDs in these topics, and it's, you think it's hard to change your mind. Woo! Try a guy with a PhD in some major science, astronomy, geology, astrophysics, cosmology. You know, the list goes on. But try and change somebody's mind in one of those fields, and you got a job on your hands. But the people like these geologists who look at me and they're like with their hands up. And they said, you know, this is recent. And they were giving a talk at the American Geophysical Union meeting, and I was the only person there. I was the only person in attendance at their meeting. And there should have been dozens of people there. And I've had similar experiences. I could list them one after the other. But the point is, before I got into some of these details, your brain has been programmed to think that the solar system formed all at one time. It was a long time ago. It happened relatively in the same time frame as the sun forming, and that the sun gives off heat from this energy core. So these base concepts have been just pounded down the public's throat until when I come along, and every one of these, I say not a single one of these is true. The fusion of the sun is in the surface atmosphere, etc. Well, you know, it takes, you know, if there were one thing that changed, that would be one thing. But when there are 10 things that change, then we have a problem. We have a problem that the mind, just like, you know, it's like taking 10 things going down the hill and trying to stop them and reverse them and go back up the hill, so to speak. So it's really difficult. So tonight I'll be talking more about some of these cosmological interactions and how, when you understand what comets are, you understand that comets can form planets, the big comets, then a lot of this starts to make sense. But there's a lot of background work that you have to do to unchange your old mindset, to put in place the new mindset, and understand, too, there's a bit of trust going on here that I did my homework, which when you read my work, you can understand that this was not just a comet theory. It was not just an idea that maybe planets form after the other planets, that the planet formation occurs on an ongoing basis, or why there's layering of Earth and the oil from ancient crusts of the Earth are now deep within the Earth and have been covered and covered and covered over the millennia. So these are all things that you're just not used to thinking. You're used to hearing, oh, the moon rocks. They tell us all about the moon. But then you find out what I tell you is that, no, the moon rocks have nothing to do with the moon. They all landed. They came in from someplace else. Not a single thing on the surface of the moon has anything remotely to do with the moon, nor the moon's formation, or anything else. So, you know, literally, when you start going down the line, like the domino principle, once one of these starts to fall, they all do, but my point is that you have to have a certain, once you start seeing this, and you see that I've done my homework, and I've knocked down all the dominoes and replaced them with things that do make sense, you really have to wonder what's going on in science, because they can't seem to grasp this, but that's a whole other issue. So anyway, I'll be talking some more about comets and planets and other side issues. First of all, a couple comments that deserve noting, and I've captured this picture a guy named Buzz Aldrin, who was one of the alleged first three men on the moon. He was the alleged second man on the moon. And he just came out with a book that says that NASA should go to Mars by the year 2040. Well, if you calculate and you figure that there's only a few months left of this year, or a few days, then we're talking about 22 years from now. That's a career. That's more than a career. So anybody that would be starting, say, day one, right out of grad school, some PhD engineer, right out of grad school, would be retired before they ever went to Mars. So this is like projecting out careers or generations into the future. So that's a little strange, but even more strange, Buzz has come out with his own new New York line of designer clothes, backpacks. He even has a designer American flag. And so you got to see this. I'm posting it on my webpage. Just scroll down for the pictures of the day that go along with this show. And I'll be posting a picture of Buzz in his buzzy new clothing line. So he's capitalizing off of this. And it looks like he's standing with a background picture of, I don't know, is it Mars? Looks like Mars, kind of a reddish background, you know, landscape. But this is so bizarre. But what Trump did on Monday, I just have to briefly talk about this, and I actually did a pretty good expose on the Power Hour yesterday and on John Moore's show. So I'm not going to repeat everything that I said there. I'll just summarize it. But Trump on Monday signed the National Space Policy Directive. And this is ordering NASA to begin a manned space program and with the effort to go back to the moon, establish a base that would then be used to go to Mars. Now, the subtlety here is that during Trump's campaign, he made comments, kind of crude, but, you know, in the Trump manner of speaking, he made statements indicating that he didn't believe NASA went to the moon back in 69, the Apollo program. So anyway, and now as president, NASA is the only agency that was funded 100%. None of the other agencies, the EPA and the HUD and all of the other agencies, they all got a significant chop all of the agencies got a big cut, except for NASA. And this is strange because you have to understand the politics, and I've explained this before, that NASA a long time made itself Congress-proof and in a sense president-proof, in that if all of the constituencies, all of the regions, all of the districts of congressional districts on the House level, that is the 435 congressional districts throughout the 50 states, all had placed contracts in small companies, and these companies might make a bolt, they might make a, I don't know, whatever, a handle or whatever they make. But they're part of the space program, and that was so that no congressman would ever vote against a NASA budget. But anyway, in a sense, it's president-proof also. In other words, a president would not do anything negative against NASA because it would be politically incorrect and it would cause a lot of ruffled feathers. So Trump is, interestingly enough, sending, and this was spearheaded by Pence. Now, the good old boy corporate network is very much behind this, of course, drooling at the bit, chomping at the bit, to get their piece of the federal pie, because without NASA and its $20 billion, a lot of these companies wouldn't be in business. It's like subsidies for wind and solar generation. They simply would not be in business. And so that's the case with the space program. So listen to some of these names. The National Space Council, which is a made up of some old astronauts and some corporate giant representatives to keep the space program as we know it moving and getting that government funding. Because as I said, without that money, you got people like Elon Musk or Richard Branson who have deep pockets, billionaires who have enough dough to stick into space exploration and are making it profitable. So good for them, at least, you know, even though there's some problems with that whole process too. Because to get his military contracts, Elon Musk had to sell out to the devil, shake hands with the devil, so to speak. Then there's the National Space Council, I mean the Commercial Space Flight Federation. And so that's interesting because we're talking about private companies getting together, forming an organization to promote spaceflight. But subtly, this does not include you. They're trying to do their with the FAA and put red tape and roadblocks in front of people. It's going to be very difficult for the average person to. It's easy to go surfing. You grab your surfboard, you go out in the ocean. Nobody knows who you are. They don't even ask you. They don't care if you break your noggin on a rock surfing. But they sure don't want you going into outer space. They're sure concerned about your safety there. We sure don't want anybody getting hurt in outer space, so we got to block everybody from going into outer space. You know, kids are flying around on skateboards, jumping down pipes and tubes and falling on their head. Nobody cares about that. Nobody. There's not a peep. Did you ever hear the FAA or some federal agency saying, we got to crack down on these skateboard kids? They could hurt themselves. Or how about the surfers? Or how about, you know, anything? You know, it's kind of funny when you look at it, but they're sure concerned about your safety if you want to go into outer space. Anyway, the Trump directive, what's interesting is he is requiring NASA to go to the moon first. Now, this is a very subtle way in my interpretation, and of course, I may be wrong on this, but my feeling is that this is because he's going to make NASA prove their, you know, proof's in the pudding. He is going to make them go back to the moon, and if they can't go to the moon, little boys and girls, grandmas and grandpas, how on earth are they going to go to Mars? And that's a logical question. Trump is a businessman. If he was going to go down and have Trump Tower built, and he hired a company that had never built a three-story building, he'd probably want some proof that they could build a skyscraper before he hired them. So, well, let's build a 10-story building, see how you do there, and then we'll talk about the skyscraper. And that's what we're dealing with, the effort to go to Mars. But NASA did not want to go to the moon. They wanted to go to Mars, and they go, ooh, that's really a long one. That's going to take 25 years. And, of course, that 22 years to 2040 would slip. Now, we'd be talking about 2050. All these people would be dead. They wouldn't even be able to play golf on their retirement by the time that rolls around. Anyway, I won't burn this up, but Buzz Aldrin, take a look at my webpage. Take a look at the picture of Buzz and Beast. Pay attention to the flag he's sporting. Now, you gotta, this is the main reason I posted this, is not because I think you're going to buy Buzz's clothes. I don't think I will be. But look at the flag that he has posted. Look at this flag. It's not the American flag. I don't know what it is. It's got stars, got some stripes. It's got some red, white, and blue, but it's got some other colors too. See? You tell me, what do you think? So just go to my webpage and check that out. Let me talk about this also. Tonight is the 14th, and actually the early morning this morning were the Gemini meteorites, or meteors, the meteor stream it's called, and these come in from outer space at high speed. And so I don't know if there'll be any left this tomorrow morning, the 15th, There might be a few trailers, but this allegedly was caused by a comet. And they allegedly have identified this comet, but it's a sun grazer. It's a comet that, well, it's not really grazing the sun's surface, but approaches halfway between the orbit of Mercury and the sun, and then comes out, and then twice a year we get this, or two nights a year, I should say, we get the Gemini meteor stream. So anyway, hopefully you got to see that, or you can probably see some videos of these. They say dozens per hour. So if you go out, something that I always do, it's always fun to watch these things zipping into the atmosphere and thinking about what's going on out there, and that, you know, someday maybe there'll be a bigger one coming into the atmosphere. But these are little just chunks of rock, nothing big, nothing that's going to cause any damage. There was a movie I saw when I was younger. It was took place in Arabia, one of those Arabian Night movies, and these guys were captured. And so anyway, the way they got loose from the captors was they were watching shooting stars coming through the atmosphere. And one of the prisoner guys, who is the good guy in the movie, he goes out loud enough, like a secret, but loud enough so the guards were able to hear it, said, you know, these are turn into pearls when they hit the ground. And so anyway, the guards overheard this, and then he started tossing pebbles out, just regular old pebbles. And he had those guards searching all over the ground for the pearls that were, the meteors were allegedly changing into pearls. And that got the attention of the guards away, and they were able to escape. So anyway, astronomy has taken many turns throughout the ages, many what you might call old wives' tales. So that's the Gemini meteor stream, the last 2 days, the last two mornings. Here's an interesting thing, and I want to spend a little bit of time concentrating on this, because there's been some claims in the news, in the science news media, that the principle of general relativity has been confirmed by experiments in satellites. And specifically what is known as the principle of equivalence. Now, the principle of equivalence is fairly general. And let me just preface this by saying that the special theory of relativity is not included here. That's well documented, many experiments that verify the speed of light moving at a constant velocity, no matter what your frame of reference, etc. But special relativity deals with frames of reference in gravitational systems where there are fields. In other words, you're sitting in a chair, you're standing in a room, there's some weightless astronauts listening to me, maybe. But pretty much everybody that's listening to this show is being held down to planet Earth by gravity. In fact, the astronauts are too, except that they're going in a orbit where they're in a free fall at just the exact rate that keeps them in orbit around the Earth. But, okay, so anyway, there was an experiment designed to be used in satellites, and it amounts to somewhat the same thing that Galileo did. Two different size, different mass objects. And one of them is heavy and one of them is light. And the idea is that when you let them fall, and this is the famous Galileo did this at the Leaning Tower of Pisa. He had a small steel ball and a big steel ball. And Aristotelian philosophy, physics, if you want to call it that, said that the bigger ball should fall faster. Well, that was some kind of bad logic, but it was taught for literally thousands of years through the Greek era, through the Roman era, and Galileo started with what we called true science, where you do experiments, and the experimental results give you the truth, and then you have to tailor your theories around the truths. And that's what I try and do when I do my science dealing with the plasma discharge comet model, or the idea that the solar fusion is up in the atmosphere, or all of those other things. But anyway, this experiment to be performed or being performed in a satellite has two different size objects, and the idea is that they would fall towards the Earth at the same rate. And then somehow this would prove the principle of equivalence. The principle of equivalence in general relativity states that if you're in a gravitational system, like sitting in your chair or sitting in your laboratory, and you do a series of experiments, and then you go out into outer space, into free space, away from any masses, and that's why this experiment, the first reason why this experiment is not valid that they're doing is because they're not in free space. They're orbiting Earth. They're precisely not doing what the principle of equivalence is stating. The principle of equivalence is the famous elevator example or analogy of Einstein. It says that if you are in free space with nothing around and you have a rocket engine and you accelerate at the same acceleration as the acceleration that you would experience at the surface of the Earth, then all the experiments should be equivalent. And so now here's the catch. Here's the catch. If you do experiments with physical things like balls and steel balls or whatever, then they should turn out the same. But if you do an experiment with light, now if you're moving in this elevator and the elevator is wide enough, you send a beam of light in one side, well, naturally it's going to take some time to cross the elevator. And when it hits the other side, it's going to drop down a little bit. And okay, well then Einstein reasoned that the same thing should happen and light should bend around a planetary or gravitationally significant object if this gravitational field would be large enough. And so there was a lot of calculations, etc. And supposedly this was proven by Arthur Eddington around, 1919, the famous, or 1918, I forget, but the famous Arthur Eddington experiment where he went to an island off of Africa and did this experiment. The experiment was to see if there was bending of distortion of the field around the sun. So taking a picture of the stars that would be around the sun when the sun wasn't there, and then taking a picture when the sun was there during a total solar eclipse, would supposedly prove this. And so they had a bright cluster of stars that happened to be passing by the sun at that time. But the end result was that, and I've done lectures on this, showing that the data was fudged. Not only fudged, but cherry-picked and fudged. And I'm not sure what other words I could throw in there. But it was conclusive that this did not prove general relativity. But they cherry-picked the data and published it, and from that point on, it was just railroaded into prominence. But here's the point, though. The principle of equivalence, the real meat of it, has to do with light and passing around gravitational objects. But the experiment they're doing in this satellite has nothing to do with light. And it just is dealing with two gravitational objects. They're not in free space. They're in orbit around the Earth, which is not the famous elevator example. It's an artificial gravitationless environment. But there's certainly some problems with that, which I won't go into on this show, some technical issues based on just the fact that these objects are different size, etc., gets into some very strange problems. But they're making the claim that this has solidified or given more credence to the principle of the theoretical work of general relativity. Now, Einstein himself disagreed with general relativity, and he said so in his own autobiography. It's called Out of My Later Years. You can read it on page, 105, where he says, at least in the version I had, where he says that the general relativity theory does not include the total field, meaning that how can we imagine that light, electromagnetic radiation, bends around a gravitational object when we don't know why it would bend, or there's no theoretical structure, there's no theoretical experimentation relative to electric and magnetic fields. In other words, the total field, gravity, electric, magnetic. And you could probably throw in nuclear if you wanted to get down to that level. But the three biggies that we hit in macro space, gravity, electric, and magnetic fields, the general principle, the general theory of relativity only included gravity. And so Einstein complained about that. He said, until we understand these issues, then the general theory of relativity, the theory of general relativity really isn't valid. And so that has been simply bypassed. And Einstein was a very good scientist, in spite of the fact that he's taken a lot of heat in recent years. My view of studying history is Einstein was a fabulous scientist. He made some breakthroughs that were phenomenal and very unique, and he had a very unique style of doing science. And he could find the core issues of the day and put a very simple explanation on them. And these were the keys. It's like everybody came along and remember the story about the child and the sword, that there was a sword in a rock. And the idea was that whoever drew the sword out of the rock would be king. And the great knights came and they pulled and they found all types of methods to pull on the sword. Nobody could get the sword out of the rock. And a young boy came up and very gently pulled the sword out of the rock. And there was a technique to doing this. And so at any rate, it's science is much the same way. It's very subtle. It's very intuitive when you get to these problems where you're out on the cutting edge where nobody has been before, which is the case with Einstein and many of his theoretical discoveries. He was just out on the edge in the middle of nowhere and came up with these brilliant ideas. So the idea that this is being promoted now as substantiating general relativity is simply false. And so it really upsets me when I see this, and that's what this show is all about, talking about real science issues and bringing it to you, the public. Just a couple quick notes before I get into the main science topic here. The water filter sale still is on. It's going to go on until Christmas, so at this point, we're not guaranteeing delivery by Christmas, but you can still order. We're still working, and there'll be people, staff, some days through the holidays coming up. And so things will continue to move, but then, of course, after the first of the year, we'll be back to normal. But if you feel like ordering, get your order in now. We'll be processing orders. Some of them may still be delivered before Christmas. But I don't want to make promises and then people feel bad. It happens every year. I get the long faces and the people angry because they ordered something and it was, a few weeks before Christmas and it didn't get there because it was for a present. And so I don't like to make promises. Anything having to do with Imperials is pretty much for sure you wouldn't get it by Christmas. And so, but the sale is still on. And after Christmas, the sale probably will come down. There's 10% off plus an extra 5% off. So take advantage of that. Also, my paid cast, last month, my topic was, November topic was space travel, the past, present, and beyond in the future. And this month's paid cast topic deals with alternative energy. So be sure to check that out. It's $3.95 a month. And extra science topics where I don't talk about anything else. I don't have any side issues or political commentary. I just go directly into these science issues and discuss them for an hour. And so it's a way for you to help me out a little bit. That helps pay the bills and keep things up to date here. And there's so many things that I do in the background, and also just to keep the web page, answering emails. And people wonder, do I have a big staff? No, I'm not like the big radio shows where I got a staff. I do this stuff myself because I've learned the hard way that if I have somebody else doing something and they leave, or even worse, they do something that's really not beneficial, then I have to go in and undo it and then have to redo it, and it takes me more time to do that. So I just do it myself. And I've had some problems recently that I've cured, but companies, I try and keep association with small companies, not the big mega companies, because they have horrible customer service. You call them up, nobody answers. So I've stayed with smaller firms that provide me with certain services for support of the web page and everything else. And basically, though, even with that, I've had some issues with some of these companies, which I've solved now. But that's one of the main reasons why I now have a nice new spiffy shopping cart on my sales page. And it you can pay with a credit card or pay with PayPal. But I have drop-down menus. It's greatly simplified, much simpler, much easier to use. So if you haven't been to the web sales page, go check it out and maybe even buy something. At this point in time, I do not yet have the book buttons updated. So they're only the water filter stuff is available. But I will be updating those book buttons. If you see the little gray order button where it says order, those are not functioning, but the add to cart buttons are all working. So all the water filter products have the add to cart button. So they're all available, including the big commercial systems where you can get great reductions in price when you buy the filter packs along with the main filter unit. These are amazing. There's nothing else like it on the market. Well, just go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Check it out. Okay, on to the main science topic. And oh, by the way, I just want to tell people that I appreciate their responding to my request about the wing generator. These are people that have ranches, farms, etc., that are at the end of the power line, and they want a power solution. So anyway, if you are in that category, if you have a ranch or farm or, say, a small industry that needs power, and email me, just go to my webpage. Also, the email address is right there. I don't want to say it on the air because people will misspell it. Just go to my webpage, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the notice. Email me and just say wing in the subject line, and we'll get back to you and discuss with a questionnaire, discuss your situation, and then work with you to see what kind of energy requirements you have, etc. So all of those three things, the water filter sale, the paid cast, and the wing emails, all on my webpage. Okay, on to the main science topic. Okay, so this idea about comets being instrumental in the solar system, we have been taught, we've been pounded into us that comets are little. And the phraseology, if you look at, say, space.com or any of the other mouthpiece news agencies or fake news agencies for science, they will constantly be referring to them as little icy wanderers or puffy little nothings, with the phraseology, which gives you the, whether you like it or not, you're being primed, so to speak, to believe certain things. You never hear major, big, explosive, dangerous comet. You will never hear that in the media. You will never hear anything remotely resembling that. Harmless little snowball, little dusty wanderer. You know, that does not give you the impression of something dangerous. You know, and of course, if it comes crashing into Earth, then that would be something, but not many people really worry about that. The big comets are actually pretty rare. So tonight I wanted to concentrate on, this is a topic that's very poorly understood. So if something comes into the solar system, what is the probability, in terms of physics, what's the cross-section that it would have an encounter of significance with Earth? Well, first of all, there is one way that a comet can interact with Earth where it doesn't even come close to Earth. And we've seen this happen where the comet will interact with the sun, cause an electrical spark, which causes major solar flaring, and the flare then affects Earth. So those things can happen. But bar that, that's one of the possibilities. But in this discussion, I want to talk about what is the probability that this object, and let's imagine it's the size of our moon or bigger, meaning that it's going to develop into a big comet. The discharge of the solar capacitor is going to be significant, and therefore it's going to be a big comet. It's going to have a coma a million miles wide. I mean, this is a big raging comet, and we could have electrical effects. It could come near enough to cause gravitational effects, but let's just take that window of a million miles. Okay, so how far is a million miles? Our distance, first of all, Earth is about 8,000 miles in diameter. So just imagine that. Let's imagine this. Okay, you're in your car, and in an average year, you put on 25,000 miles. You drive a little bit more. You have a ways to go to work, you know, driving the kids to soccer matches or whatever. And say your average distance you drive is 25,000 miles. That's the distance around the Earth. In other words, if you put on 25,000 miles in 1 year, you've basically driven the equivalent of going around the Earth one time. Also, say that you drove, some people drive a lot. Let's say you put on 100,000 miles in a year, like a salesman or a businessman or whatever, 100,000 miles, that's not impossible. That would be the equivalent of going around the Earth four times, or in space distance, that would be the equivalent of going about a third of the way to the moon. The moon is about 250,000 miles away. So 2.5 times that 100,000 miles is the distance to the moon. So if you were putting 100,000 miles on your car, you could drive to the moon and back in 5 years at that rate. So that just gives you a little bit of feeling for distances out there. So 250,000 miles to the moon. And now, so 1,000,000 miles would be four times the distance to the moon. So that would mean if the comet had a coma, which have been measured, say 10,000,000 miles, that would be 40 times the distance to the moon. So that's how close a big comet could come to Earth and still have electrical interactions. At that distance, it would not have gravitational interactions. It would have to come really, really close to Earth physically. The nucleus of the comet would have to come physically close to Earth to cause gravitational, but we could still get some electrical discharges, some severe weather, some other, hurricanes, things like that that would, we've heard about these, the ancients talk about them. But, okay, so let's use that as a measure. Let's use 10 million miles. If something comes within 10 million miles, then there's potential, and we're talking about big comets. We're not talking about Halley's Comet. We're not talking, because Halley's Comet has come close, we're not talking about other little comets, which have come relatively close, and they look relatively big in the sky, but physically they're not very big. So we're talking something on the order of Hale-Bopp, the comet Hale-Bopp, which did not come near us, and really did not cause a lot of effects with Earth, other than we had a lot of pumping up of the solar energy. The solar energy drained through that comet, and now we're reaping the negative benefits of the presence of Hale-Bopp in the solar system, because the solar capacitor had been depleted, and right now we're in a lull. The sun is very inactive and has been for the last, probably 12 years, in fact. Very, very low solar cycles. And in spite of that, we've managed to keep our weather, everything just about, the temperatures have not fluctuated tremendously out of the norm. But still, it has affected planet Earth and weather. So, but let's imagine this 10 million mile limit. Well, how far is 10 million miles? Earth is 90 million miles from the sun. So that's about a tenth the distance to the sun, just to give you an idea of distance. Okay, so I'm going to do a little bit of juggling in the background here, but just to give you an idea of what I'm doing. We take a sphere that the Earth is 93 million miles from the sun. We take a sphere, spherical surface, with a radius of 93 million miles. And that's the what we call cross-sectional target. That if a comet is coming into, say, the inner solar system beyond Earth, which is a second question, then is it going to cross within a 10 million mile radius circle of Earth? Now, that's a pretty big window to have a comet approach, or say that it would affect Earth. So this is at the very outer limit. But just to give you an idea, now, there's a comet coming into the solar system right now. We call it K2, and allegedly just discovered by NASA. They actually had discovered it a number of years earlier in an automated search, but didn't announce it. Whether they did on purpose or by mistake is questionable. But it's not going to come within Earth's orbit. It's going to come the closest to the sun around the orbit of Mars, which is quite a ways away from Earth. So that would not even be included in our example here. So there's a whole host of comets that are not even included and in this example. So take a surface of a sphere that's the radius is 93 million miles from the sun. So this is a big sphere that would, the surface would look like a big globe with Earth moving around the equator, so to speak, of this big sphere in its orbit, Earth's orbit around the sun. Okay, so if we had a 10 million mile radius circle around Earth, what's the probability that a comet that does penetrate that sphere would come within that 10 million mile circuit? Well, the area of a circle around Earth is pi r squared, so we just do pi times 10 million miles squared. And then the surface area of that sphere is 4 pi r squared. And so we make a calculation of that using 93 million miles for that r. It's a different r than the first calculation. But anyway, without going through a lot of number crunching on the air here, it turns out that it's about a 1 in 320 possibility that it'll even come within that window. That's for comets that do make it in this far, and many, many, many comets do not make it this far. So what's the real probability that something would actually come within that window where it could have some type of effect on Earth? It's actually relatively small, and even those effects for the majority of that circle, that 10 million mile circle around Earth, the effects would be relatively small. If we continue these calculations and include all of the comets that would not come even close to Earth, then what we're dealing with here is a very low probability that something would have any effect on Earth at all, other than the remote possibility that the comet interacts with the sun's surface. throws out some solar flares, which then somehow affect Earth. And there again, that's a low probability, because just in the sun's normal activity, when it's there's solar flaring going on, the possibility on a just taking at random flares coming off the sun, the probability that one is going to affect Earth is pretty small, because they come off the sun and they go in all different directions. So what's the possibility that a flare just coming off the sun in a normal solar activity would affect Earth? Actually, pretty small. So the point is that when people hear this idea of Planet X, oh, when is Planet X coming? You know, first of all, if there is such a thing, now let me explain this, because Planet X was real. It was the nucleus of Hale-Bopp the comet. That something was totally hidden from you, the public. It's something I finally figured out, and I have a DVD which covers this entire topic. It was discovered in 1989 by Robert Harrington of the Naval Observatory, and it came through the solar system. NASA lied about it, about the size of the nucleus, that it had a companion. NASA lied about that. Tremendous amount of lying and scientific just lies, that's all you can say, to the public. But the issue was that it did, Comet Hale-Bopp did come very close to Earth's orbit, and I talk about all of that in the in my DVD that's downloadable on the webpage. The only trouble is that Earth had moved 3 months ahead in its orbit, and it missed us by a tremendous amount. So those are other factors, because comets change their orbits. That's why the ancients called them the lawless ones. So the end result is that it's very difficult to calculate or determine, given what we know today about changing orbits of comets. We don't really have a lot of data, because nobody has ever taken data. We have the data on Hale-Bopp, which shows a change from a 4,200-year orbit to a 2,600-year orbit in a single passage of the sun. But that tells us that the big comets do have their orbits significantly changed. And it was not due to interaction with the orbit of Jupiter, as you'll read about on some of the disinformation websites. Totally incorrect, because it was changing on a daily basis. The ephemeris of the comet Hale-Bopp changed constantly for a period of 6 years. And so the change in the orbit was due to the tail drag, not due to an interaction with Jupiter. As you would read if you go to, say, Wikipedia, which is a total disinformation source when it comes to science, especially about space science, and especially when it comes to topics like Hale-Bopp. But the end result is that even if something were to come into the solar system, and I don't have any information about such an object at this point that might be, say, Earth-threatening, Comet Hale-Bopp was potentially Earth-threatening, but as I said, it slowed down, allowed Earth to move ahead in its orbit, and it missed us by a long shot. So what is the real probability that an object would do any kind of damage to Earth? It's actually extremely small. Very, very low probability. So just because something comes into the solar system does not imply that it's going to have damaging effects on Earth, or any other planet for that matter. It might pass through the solar system. Hale-Bopp did pass through the solar system and really did not come very close to anything. So, other than affect the sun and the discharge of the solar capacitor, Hale-Bopp was kind of a nothing. But it could have been a big deal if Earth would have been in a different position in its orbit. It could have come within a million miles of Earth. And when we're talking about this, that's well within our 10 million mile circle of what we call our circle of trust. If you've ever seen the movie, there's a movie where the guy keeps talking about his circle of trust. But their circle of danger, you might call it, if it's 10 million miles, Hale-Bopp would have been, if Earth were in a different position in its orbit, we would have been well within that 10 million miles, and we would have been well within the coma of Hale-Bopp. We would have had the sun blotted out. We would have had tremendous rainstorms. It would have been a Noah's flood type of event, in fact, if we would have been in a different position in our orbit. But nobody talks about that. Nobody even blinks an eye at that at NASA, because whether you believe there are snowballs or my plasma discharge comet model, we would have been in the coma, the cloud around Comet Hale-Bopp, and for a significant period of time. So, but that did not happen because, as I said, Hale-Bopp slowed down due to the tail drag. Earth moved ahead in its orbit, and it missed us by a tremendous distance, way outside of that 10 million mile window. Okay, so anyway, anytime somebody says, well, when is Planet X coming back? Just because even if something did come into the solar system, that does not mean it's going to necessarily even come close to Earth or have any effect on Earth at all. Even if it's big, even if it were a Jupiter-sized object, the possibility that it would come close to Earth or any other planet is actually quite remote. So anyway, just a little bit of kind of general discussion on that topic. Remember, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Got the 10% sale plus an extra 5% up till Christmas time. So go take advantage of that. Check out the new sales page with the drop-down menus and the add to cart button and the shopping cart. All very easy to use. And just remember that nobody else has the water filters, the filter elements, the JMCC-GF water filter elements that are, there's just nothing like them on the planet. So check that out. They're made in the USA. Plus the webcast, the paid cast, weekly science topics, $3.95 a month. And also the wing, if you're interested in remote power at it could be a cabin, it could be basically for people with ranches or farms where you have serious power requirements and you need a serious power solution, contact me at the email address on the webpage. Use the title Wing. We'll get back to you to make sure you're a serious, legitimate customer, and then do some more analysis to make sure you get a good system that'll work far into the future. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.